to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is the place to be, featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee. Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m.
every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
For the first time in U.S. history, a former president has been criminally charged with conspiring to overturn an election. We'll look at this historic indictment of Donald J. Trump, who remains the Republican frontrunner in the 2024 election. We'll speak to former federal prosecutor Dennis Aftergut and Robert Weissman, president of Public Citizen. Then to the war in Ukraine.
We do, of course, support this summit. We have long said that it is important that Ukraine be in the driver's seat when it comes to any potential diplomatic resolution to this war.
As Saudi Arabia prepares to host a peace summit this weekend, we'll look at the state of the war as Russia attacks grain ports in Ukraine while Kyiv escalates drone strikes inside Russia. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. For the first time in U.S. history, a former president has been criminally charged with conspiring to overturn an election. On Tuesday, Donald Trump was indicted on four counts: conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, tampering with a witness, and conspiracy against the civil rights of citizens, the right of their vote to be counted. The indictment centers on Trump's efforts to stay in office after Joe Biden defeated him in November 2020. Trump, who is the Republican frontrunner in the 2024 race, now faces two federal indictments as well as a state indictment, a criminal case in New York. No other U.S. president has ever been indicted before. Trump also faces a possible fourth indictment in Georgia for election interference. This is Special Counsel Jack Smith speaking Tuesday.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
Trump's lawyer, John Lauro, decried the indictment as a, quote, attack on free speech and political advocacy. The 45-page indictment also references six unnamed co-conspirators. It's believed the list includes four of Trump's lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, Sidney Powell, and Kenneth Cheesebrough, as well as Jeffrey Clark, a former Justice Department official. Trump's trial has been assigned to District Judge Tanya Chutkan. She's an Obama appointee who's already overseen numerous cases linked to the January 6th insurrection, often sentencing defendants to longer terms than the prosecutors sought. We'll have more on the historic indictment after headlines. In related news, prosecutors in Michigan have charged two Trump allies over their attempts to illegally access and tamper with voting machines following the 2020 election. Matthew DiPerno unsuccessfully ran as a Republican candidate to become Michigan's attorney general last year. Dara Rendon is a former Republican state representative. They were both arraigned Tuesday, are due back in court next month. The American Civil Liberties Union of Colorado has sued the FBI, the Colorado Springs Police Department, and local officers for illegally searching the private Facebook messages of a local activist in the Chinook Center, a community organizing hub in Colorado Springs. The police also accessed the activist's cell phone, laptop, and external hard drives. This comes after revelations the FBI had infiltrated the Chinook Center by sending an undercover Colorado Springs detective to volunteer at the center in 2020. This was part of a broader FBI effort to infiltrate racial justice groups in Colorado after the police killing of George Floyd. A federal lawsuit brought by Iraqi torture survivors appears finally headed to trial after a federal judge refused to dismiss the case. The Iraqis are suing the U.S. military contractor Khaki, which was hired to provide interrogation services out of Abu Ghraib, an Iraqi prison where the men were tortured by U.S. guards. The lawsuit was first filed in 2008. Since then, Khaki has attempted 18 times to have the case dismissed. Burma's military rulers granted deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi a pardon in five of the 19 cases against her. Suu Kyi was ousted and detained in February 2021 military coup. She'll remain under house arrest. She's a Nobel Peace Prize winner who once fought against the Burmese military but later defended its genocide of Rohingya Muslims in 2017. On Monday, the military junta again extended a state of emergency and delayed elections that had been promised to take place this month. A local rights group says over 3,800 people have been killed in the military's crackdown on post-coup protests and over 24,000 people arrested. In Argentina, thousands of people representing different indigenous communities arrived in Buenos Aires Tuesday as part of a protest caravan. Among their demands is a halt to lithium mining projects in their territories. This is Fabian Cruz of the Huancamaque Indigenous People Council.
These common resources of the people, we want to protect them. We understand there are multinational companies that come and take the lithium from Argentina, but leave nothing behind. They leave nothing for Argentina's development, and they strip the communities of their territory. To us, that is genocide.
Lithium is used in many electric devices, including electric cars, but its extraction causes soil degradation, water shortages, damage to ecosystems, and often displaces local communities and destroys existing landscapes. Sweden's defended its free speech laws and says it has no plans to change them amidst a growing backlash to public burnings of the Quran. The burnings, which have also taken place in Denmark, have triggered widespread international condemnation and protests in Muslim countries. Back in the United States, Missouri Congressmember Cori Bush has reintroduced the Unhoused Bill of Rights, which could provide universal housing in the U.S. by 2027, helping some 1.5 million people who now live on the streets. Bush was herself once unhoused and forced to live in her car with her children. She said, quote, "We have the power and money to end the unhoused crisis. We just need the will to reorient congressional priorities," she said. Here in New York, hundreds of migrants have been forced to sleep on the streets as Mayor Eric Adams declared there's no more room. He called out the Biden administration for failing to help as over 90,000 people arrived in New York City over the past year and a half. In July, the mayor said New York City would distribute flyers at the U.S.-Mexico border, telling asylum seekers to consider another city. Housing and rights advocates have blasted the Adams administration for its handling of the situation. This is Marada Wauda of the New York Immigration Coalition.
It's kind of another slap in the face to our, you know, historical New Yorkers who've been here and our most recent arrivals who are just seeking a little bit of help in this moment. We need to actually stop doubling and tripling down on broken systems like our emergency shelter system and actually invest in getting people out of emergency shelter and into permanent housing.
New York officials are calling on the federal government to allow for expedited work permits for asylum seekers. In Long Island, New York, the suspect in the Gilgo Beach serial murders appeared in court Tuesday following his arrest last month. 59-year-old Rex Hoyerman is accused of murdering three women. He's also been named as the prime suspect in a fourth murder. He's pleaded not guilty. This is Suffolk County District Attorney Raymond Tierney.
The victims went missing between July of 2010 and July of 2007 and September of 2010. In December of 2010, they were their bodies were recovered. They were buried in a similar fashion, in a similar location, in a similar way. All the women were petite. They all did the same thing for a living. They all advertised the same way.
The four victims were Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. The bodies of another seven people, including a man and a toddler, were also found in the same time period. The family members of the four women have accused police and the media for failing to pursue justice for their loved ones because they were sex workers. Rex Hoyerman is an architect who worked in Manhattan. Following his arrest, authorities searched his Massapequa Park home, where they found an arsenal of 279 weapons. Elsewhere in New York, public hospital nurses are celebrating after winning contract negotiations, which include wage increases to achieve parity with private hospital nurses and measures to improve staffing and retention. Crystal Sims Murphy of the New York State Nurses Association said, quote, "The public sector is a lifeline for New York City's most vulnerable patients, who are mostly black and brown, immigrant and low-income New Yorkers. They deserve equitable, quality care, and this contract can help deliver it," she said. In other labor news, the trucking company Yellow is shutting down and will reportedly file for bankruptcy. 30,000 people could lose their jobs. The president of the Teamsters, which represents over two-thirds of Yellow workers, said, quote, "Yellow's historically proven that it could not manage itself despite billions of dollars in worker concessions and hundreds of millions in bailout funding from the federal government," unquote. Yellow received $700 million from the government in a pandemic-era bailout, despite the company facing a lawsuit from the Justice Department for allegedly defrauding the federal government. The family of Henrietta Lacks, a black cancer patient whose cells were taken by Johns Hopkins University Hospital without her consent in 1951, has settled with pharmaceutical company Thermo Fisher Scientific. Henrietta Lacks' family has denounced the racist medical system that allowed the biotech company to make billions in profit from the HeLa cell line, from the name Henrietta Lacks, which helped produce remedies for multiple diseases, including the first polio vaccine. Details of the settlement were not made public, but the plaintiff celebrated the lawsuit's resolution, which came Tuesday on Henrietta Lacks' birthday. This is her grandson, Alfred Lacks.
Our family member, our loved one, Henrietta Lacks, 103 years old today. And as Ben said, today, it couldn't have been a more fitting day for her to have justice.
Yeah.
For her family to have relief. It was a long fight. It was a long fight, over 70 years. And Henrietta Lacks gets her day.
To see all of our coverage of Henrietta Lacks and this case, go to democracynow.org. And the prominent Chicano writer, Roberto Sintli Rodriguez, has died at the age of 69. His books include Justice, A Question of Race, which chronicled his quest for justice after being brutally beaten in 1979 by four sheriff deputies in East Los Angeles while he was on a reporting assignment for Lowrider magazine. In 1986, a jury awarded him $205,000, which he used to start a bilingual magazine. He later became a Mexican-American studies professor at the University of Arizona. He also served as director of the Raza Database Project to track the killing of Latinos, Asian, and indigenous people by law enforcement. He appeared on Democracy Now! In 2021.
And then again, it's all about dehumanization. And I'm not exaggerating when I say I track this violence to 1492, which means when Europeans came here, they decided that the people here, like myself, that we were not human. Africans that were brought here also were not human, according to them. In my opinion, it's the same dynamic taking place today. Otherwise, we wouldn't see this massive amount of both the killings and the disparity.
Roberto Sintli Rodriguez speaking in 2021. He's died at the age of 69. To see our interviews with him, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we look at the historic indictment of Donald J. Trump for conspiring to overturn the 2020 election. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hoffman's overture to Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure. The beloved comedian, Paul Rubens, passed away on Sunday at the age of 70. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
For the first time in U.S. history, a former president has been criminally charged with conspiring to overturn an election. On Tuesday, Donald Trump was indicted on four counts: conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, tampering with a witness, and conspiracy against the rights of citizens, the right of their vote to be counted. This is the third time in 4 months the former Republican president has been criminally charged as he campaigns to regain the presidency in 2024. No other president has ever been indicted before. The Department of Justice Special Counsel Jack Smith announced the indictment charges in a short statement. He did not take questions from the press.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election. The men and women of law enforcement who defended the U.S. Capitol on January 6th are heroes. They are patriots, and they are the very best of us. They did not just defend a building or the people sheltering in it. They put their lives on the line to defend who we are as a country and as a people. They defended the very institutions and principles that define the United States. Since the attack on our Capitol, the Department of Justice has remained committed to ensuring accountability for those criminally responsible for what happened that day. This case is brought consistent with that commitment, and our investigation of other individuals continues. In this case, my office will seek a speedy trial so that our evidence can be tested in court and judged by a jury of citizens. In the meantime, I must emphasize that the indictment is only an allegation and that the defendant must be presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law.
The most serious charge against Donald Trump carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. The case was assigned to U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, who, as appointed by President Obama, has handed down sentences in January 6 insurrection cases that were harsher than prosecutors recommended. Tuesday night on CNN, Trump's lead attorney on the case, John Lauro, called the indictment an attack on Trump's free speech.
This is politics. This indictment is about pure politics. We engage in vigorous debate in this country about politics. What we don't do is criminalize political speech. This indictment is a game changer. It's the first time that we've taken political speech and said we're going to criminalize it by the party that's in control against the party that's contesting the next election, where the two individuals involved are going to be running for office. That is an incredible set of circumstances.
Trump has been ordered to make an initial appearance in federal court in Washington, D.C. Thursday. The 45-page indictment against the 45th president of the United States also references six unnamed co-conspirators. They likely include four of Trump's lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, and Sidney Powell, as well as Jeffrey Clark, a former Justice Department official. This all comes after Trump pleaded not guilty in June after he was charged with unlawful retention of classified government documents after leaving office and obstruction of justice in another Jack Smith case. Last week, prosecutors in that case added three more criminal counts that accused Trump of ordering employees to delete security videos while he was under investigation. In March, a grand jury convened by the Manhattan District Attorney indicted Trump for falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election. Meanwhile, Trump faces a fourth criminal investigation in Georgia over accusations he sought to undo his 2020 election loss in the state. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Washington, D.C., Robert Weissman is with us, president of Public Citizen, one of the groups organizing nationwide Not Above the Law, Trump indictment rapid response rallies in support of accountability this Thursday, the day of the arraignment. Also with us, Dennis Aftergut, former federal prosecutor. He's currently of counsel to lawyers defending American democracy. His piece for Slate is headlined, Jack Smith's January 6th Trump indictment is a prosecutorial masterstroke. Well, Dennis, let's begin there. Why? Can you respond to the significance of this indictment and what these four counts are all about?
First, it's an honor to be here. The significance relates to the fact that this is an indictment that will bring about not just the trial of the century, but the trial of all American history. This is an indictment about lies to disenfranchise the American people and about a man who would be king. We fought a war of independence in 1776 to 1783 to prevent that. That's why this case is more important than any other.
Dennis Aftergut, I'd like to ask you, this whole issue of these six co-conspirators, they were not indicted along with him. Obviously, the government probably is hoping for some of them to turn. But if some of them ended up being indicted, what would that do in terms of a timeline for a trial of this kind?
Nothing. What makes this indictment so elegant are two key things. One, that it was only Trump who was indicted. You can be confident that the others will not be indicted until after a trial date is set so that the trial of Trump goes first. And the other element of elegance is that all of the so many facts alleged, none of which would be alleged if Jack Smith couldn't prove them, all of them go to all four counts. That streamlines the trial to ensure that if it is set sufficiently early, the case will finish well before not just the November election, but hopefully before the Republican nominating convention in July.
And I'd like to bring in Robert Weissman of Public Citizen into the conversation. Your response to the indictment and also to the Trump campaign's statement, which was released on his social media site, Truth Social, which said in part, quote, the lawlessness of these persecutions of President Trump and his supporters is reminiscent of Nazi Germany in the 1930s, the former Soviet Union, and other authoritarian dictatorial regimes.
Yeah, thanks, Juan, and hello to you and Amy and Dennis. I think Dennis gets it exactly right in talking about how consequential this indictment and the trial will be in American history. You know, I think one of the things that's important about the indictment, it tells the story, basically the story we know that was revealed, that we saw in real time and that was detailed by the January 6th committee. But the charges, which might sound legalistic at first, are really about that conspiracy over many months to overturn the election. And one charge in particular, I think, gets to the heart of the matter, which is not just about interfering with an abstract government proceeding, but denying a conspiracy to deny people their right to vote. It's a civil rights statute tracing back to the Civil War era. And it really gets to the heart of what happened, which is that Donald Trump tried to strip away from all of us, our democracy and our individual rights to vote, to protect himself and remain in power. I think as this case, as the events of January 6th have receded in time, and the Trump presidency has receded in time, it's possible to forget how horrible that period was, the constant assault on decency, people of color, immigrants, and democracy. And this case brings that back to the fore. We can't let him become a caricature, a Saturday Night Live character. He was a real person who put us through the ringer and hopes to do so again. His comments that you read and others that come out from the campaign, leaving aside the outrage of degrading the experience of people in the Holocaust or others who've suffered in comparison to his legitimate prosecution, remind us of the strategy he's going to pursue, which is always to take fair accusations against him and throw them against his opponents. And it's going to be up to all of us to stay vigilant, not to let just recede in the background as something that's going on in the back of our heads, but to stay attentive and engaged and demand accountability take place. That's what drove this case forward. It wouldn't have happened but for people staying attentive, but for the January 6th committee. And I think to make sure we get the outcome we should get is going to require people to stay attentive and stay engaged.
I want to turn to a video posted Tuesday by the former Clinton Labor Secretary, Berkeley professor, UC Berkeley professor Robert Reich, about how and why Trump could be barred from the ballot.
Trump could face criminal charges for inciting an insurrection, but that's not necessary to bar him from the ballot. Secretaries of State and other election officials across the country have the power to determine whether candidates meet the qualifications for office. They have a constitutional duty to keep Trump off the ballot, based on the clear text of the U.S. Constitution. Now, some might argue that voters should be able to decide for themselves whether candidates are fit for office, even if they're dangerous. But the Constitution sets the bar for what disqualifies someone from being president. Candidates must be at least 35 years old and a natural-born U.S. citizen, and they must not have engaged in insurrection after they previously took an oath to defend the Constitution. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment has already been used to disqualify an insurrectionist from continuing to hold public office in New Mexico, with the state Supreme Court upholding the ruling. This is not about partisanship. If a Democrat attempts to overthrow the government, they should not be allowed on ballots either.
So that's the former Clinton Labor Secretary, Robert Reich, now UC Berkeley professor. Rob Weissman, I'm wondering your response to this. I mean, President Trump was not charged with seditious conspiracy. Also, Eugene V. Debs ran from prison, though he also was not charged with this or in prison for this.
Right. So what Robert Reich is talking about and references there is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which, as he says, disqualifies people who've taken an oath of office to the government and then have engaged in insurrections. Again, another post-Civil War amendment. It does absolutely seem to apply here. It is very clear that Trump does not need to be charged with insurrection or really charged with anything or criminally convicted to be disqualified for having supported and participated in an insurrection. Congress could take action to disqualify him. That's not going to happen. But I think we are going to see a lot of cases brought before secretaries of state across the country saying, look, you're in charge of making this decision. He drove an insurrection. He should be disqualified from the ballot in your state.
And Robert Weissman, what do you think will be the impact on the hardcore of Trump supporters who, no matter what he has been accused of or indicted for, continue to rally behind him?
I think it makes all the sense in the world to sort of think through the political ramifications of this, but also to say first that this was a case brought to defend the democracy. And I think that was the imperative. I think worries about the political consequences may have delayed the bringing of the case in the first place. Jack Smith moving forward, I think, was a decision not to do a political calculus, but just to enforce the rule of law, demand accountability, and say, if you launch a coup against the United States of America, you must be held criminally accountable. And I agree with that. In terms of the political ramifications, you know, we'll have to see. I think for the hardcore base of support for Trump, there is, as he once said, literally nothing he could do that would shake their belief in him. And in fact, every effort to hold him accountable becomes part of the story of